Hey, this is Russell Wilson.
This is Joe Montana.
This is Dak Prescott.
Hey, this is Jason Kelce, and you're listening to Rob Motti.
Rob Motti.
I am Rob Motti. Welcome to the AP Pro Football Podcast. We're rolling into week five of the NFL season. Loving October right now with playoff baseball going on at the same time. Awesome time of year. Only the Philadelphia Eagles and the San Francisco 49ers are still undefeated, both 4-0, after Buffalo pounded Miami in a statement game. The AFC East still goes through Buffalo. The Bills proved that with a dominating win over Tua Tagovailoa and the Dolphins. This week, San Francisco hosts Dallas in the marquee matchup, potential NFC championship preview. Of course, the Eagles will have a lot to say about that, so can't wait to see how that game plays out on Sunday night. The four-pack of picks are coming up. We have two special guests, future Hall of Famer Larry Fitzgerald and Tennessee Titans rookie quarterback Will Levis. We'll kick it off with Will. He was drafted by Tennessee in the second round this past April. Many draft analysts had him going in the first round. I actually had the Titans taking him in round one. They got him in the second. He's playing behind Ryan Tannehill right now and Malik Willis. He's getting an opportunity to learn. Here is my conversation with Will Levis. Will, welcome to the show. Great to talk to you again, man. Just tell me how your rookie season is going, what the learning process has been like for you.
Yeah, Rob, thanks so much for having me. And it's been a whirlwind. I mean, ever since the day I got that call to now, I feel like it's just, you know, flown by. And, you know, moving to a new city, moving into, you know, a new building with all new names and faces, it's always, you know, a little intimidating. But I mean, it's been an incredible journey, and I'm just trying to make the most of all the opportunities that I can get and just be prepared for when my opportunity comes.
What is your week like? Tell me about that preparation, because we know what football is like. Everybody's always one play away, one minute away, one game away. So what is that preparation and your week look like?
Yeah, my I think my routine is something I'm still trying to figure out. And I was actually talking to like one of my teammates who's I think like fifth, 6 year vet in the league. And he's telling me like, he's been in the league for a while. He's still trying to figure it out. You know, like there's always little things you can change and tweak to get you, your mind, your body, or whatever is of importance for you at that time in your life, ready for that week. And I mean, it's my first year being a professional athlete. I still need to figure out what that routine is going to be for me. And I'm kind of messing around with it each week. So, I mean, we work our tails off. I mean, our work days are Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We're grinding. We talk about, you know, 6 to 6, clocking in, clocking out, and putting in the work. And Saturdays we're traveling, usually a little walk through. Sunday's game, obviously, some time off on Mondays and Tuesdays, but it's a lot of work, and wouldn't want to have it any other way.
And we're talking on a Tuesday, Will, and there you are in the building, in the facility. So I'm sure you're getting that extra work in. Like no matter how much time you put in during those regular hours, it's always about that extra, isn't it?
For sure. I mean, the worst thing you can do is look back after a loss or after a performance and think that you could have done something more to help you or your team succeed. And I feel like just with anybody's preparation process, that's what you're trying to eliminate from from your mind. And when you prepare at the level that you know you're supposed to, you just have that level of confidence going into each game that you're going to go out there and you're going to dominate. So without preparation, you don't gain or you don't earn any confidence.
On game day, do you have headsets on? Are you following along? Are you charting? What are you doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I had a little earpiece in. So I'll hear as their OC brings the call in, and I'll be standing there with Malik in our offense, relaying the calls to our guys. We use like the Surface tablets, and after every play, we get the, you know, pictures from the previous play. I don't know if people understand how that works, but you get still shots from the previous play, and they get uploaded pretty quick. So I was actually the other day was my first game where I actually had the tablet on me on the sideline, and I'd remember what the play call was from that previous call. And then I'd write it on top of the picture just so it all syncs to the coach's iPads and they know what the play call was so that they can teach their guys up. So, I mean, that along with bringing the juice, bringing the energy, keeping guys focused and locked in and being a leader. And even though, you know, you're not the guy out there in the field starting, like you still got to find ways to affect and be positive with your teammates, which has been really important for me.
You guys are 2-2. The entire division is 2-2 at this point, with a huge win coming off against the Bengals, which had to surprise a lot of people to see how the Bengals have started out. What is the confidence like in that locker room, in that building, about where this team is headed?
We're just trying to take it 1 week at a time. I mean, we have a game like we'd had out in Cleveland, and then we turn around and we have a game like we had the other day. It shows, you know, how crazy a game this game is. It shows us the two sides of the two types of teams that we can be. You know, if we really approach things the right way and we go out there and execute like we know we can hang with anybody. And that game that we had on Sunday, you know, gave us that confidence back, I feel like. And I can really point to exactly what it is from a preparation standpoint that, you know, really worked for us, but we got to make sure that whatever we did last week, we keep that energy and focus up.
Do you look around at other quarterbacks, other veteran guys who've been in the league, whether it's Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, other guys, watch tape from them? Or is that something that's an off season type thing? You don't do that in season?
I mean, I'm mostly obviously watching the defensive tape of whatever team we're playing that next week. And, you know, if they so happen to be going up against a guy that, you know, I admire or I think that I could take things from their game, then I'm obviously mostly focused on what the defense is doing, but my eyes are going to be on the quarterback at the end of the day and the results of, you know, how they played. So even during a game, going out there and watching Joey the other day, watching Joey play and seeing how he operates, getting in and out of the huddle, how he's seeing the field, how he's making his throws, how he's timing up these certain routes or these concepts. You can learn a lot from these dudes, and to be at the level I am, where, you know, there's 32 of the best, you know, players at their respective positions in their sport going out there and doing their thing on a weekly basis, like it's special and it's a lot of fun.
There's guys who certainly get in the league and have instant success, and then other guys who sometimes they got to go through some ups and downs and some troubles along the way. I look at a guy like Zach Wilson and his situation and what happened in New York, lost his job, gets the job back, unfortunate situation that happened with the Jets. And then there's a lot of criticism, a lot of scrutiny. I thought some of it, like, he stepped up. I don't know if you saw any of that game Sunday night against the Chiefs. He played very well, took some positive steps forward, yet there's a lot of criticism from former players. I know you guys block out the noise, right? You're not paying attention to who's saying what. Does it hit different when it's from a former player, though?
Hey, I've never really been in that position, so I can't really speak to it. But I have all the respect in the world for Zach and how he's handled that situation. I mean, I can't remember, you know, a player that has been under fire the way he has just in the last year from his fan base, and then to take it a step further of former players, legendary players within that organization making comments. Got a feel for him, man. And he has been, you know, as mature and as responsible and, you know, he's handled it as well as I just about think anybody else could. So, I'm pulling for him, and he did play a great game the other night. And I know he only wants to go out there and play good ball, and that's just what anyone else in this league wants to do. And I hope he does, just as long as it's not against us, you know, but, it's crazy. We got a lot of things going on in our lives. Some people lose sight of that, you know, we are human beings at the end of the day. But that's what comes with the territory. That's what comes with the territory. And, if some random people making some comments about me, is what I have to deal with to play in the Professional Football League, then so be it.
I thought it was really cool. Other players who are currently playing, active players, kind of rally to his defense. It really is a brotherhood. It really is a fraternity when you're in the league right now. Did that surprise you how close the bond is, not just within your own locker room, but other guys supporting other guys who are currently playing?
Yeah, I think we have a really special locker room. I can only speak to, you know, the culture that we have and the guys that we have in this building. But, you know, I was kind of a little intimidated at first. Like, you know, you're going from college, like, you know, knuckleheads, like kids just getting through college and same age or relatively same age as everybody, and going out to, you know, grown men with families and people like that just aren't going to naturally connect with as you would in college. And I was surprised that the vibes and the culture and the just feel of the locker room was a lot more like college than I had expected, I think. And just all these dudes here, we're just kids. We're still playing a kid's game, and we're still going out there as if we were little kids playing this game. And we definitely, there might be some dudes with wives and kids, but that doesn't mean that they're going to be cracking jokes like they're 15, 16 still. So I love it. I love the dudes here. And that's just why I feel like everyone is so drawn to the locker room and the vibes that you get from it, regardless of what sport you're in. And when you got guys that make it smart and make it fun, then you can always have a good time.
Well, we talked about the preparation from a mental standpoint, physical standpoint. Part of preparation too is making sure you are able and equipped to do the best you can. And I know you've had the Evo ICL lenses, implantable lenses. Tell me about that, the decision that went into that to go with those.
Yeah, I've been struggling with my eyesight for a dozen years now. I mean, I remember getting glasses when I was in middle school and trying to get contacts as soon as I can, just because I didn't want to wear glasses. And having to deal with the struggles of wearing contacts and, you know, every day putting them in, taking them out, uncomfortability, them falling out in games. Like, I knew I wanted to get vision correction procedure done eventually. And when I realized that it was time that I could start looking at the options, I came across Evo ICL and, I realized that it was the right call for me. And I mean, it was the best decision I ever made, I think. Like, solely the fact that I can wake up and not put in contact lenses and just see right away makes the world like so much better for me. And I've been very comfortable out in the field. I can, you know, not worry about, for one, my contacts coming out. And two, just, you know, statistic wise, like my vision came back even better than 2020 after I got it. So I know that I'm seeing the field well, and I've got confidence and in that, and overall, just really exciting thing that happened in my life.
When did you do the procedure?
It was in July, so that was a couple months ago. Yeah, it was like right before training camp.
You mentioned contact lenses popping out, and took me back to college. I played baseball in college, and one of my first games, I'm running for a fly ball. It's windy. And there goes one of the contacts comes out. You're trying to catch it. I'm playing center field, trying to catch a fly ball. Contact comes out. I dropped it. Dropped the ball. So I'm sure you've been hit, right? And lost the contact at some point.
Yeah, like I got a face full of turf, and, you know, just my helmet rubbed up against it, and I had to go a whole drive without just peeking out of my right eye. It was not fun. So I mean, yeah, not having to worry about that is nice.
Well, my daughters play flag football. They're 10, and they play against boys, and they wear glasses, and they're itching to get some contact lenses. So I'm definitely going to get some info on this. I don't know what the process is like, but certainly Evo ICL sounds like a great solution. Before I let you go, Will, I would love to talk to you about the tattoo that you have on your bicep, 2 Chronicles 15:7. What it means to you, the impact of those words in that Bible verse.
Yeah, I mean, any opportunity I can to talk about this, I love it. And it's a testament to my late grandfather, who spent any time that he could with me just to try to build me up to be the best man, best, you know, human being that I could be. He built the house I grew up in. He moved next door, so he's always right there. And when I was little, all the pieces of advice, all the stories he would tell me, I kind of, you know, wasn't paying attention to, and was just trying to shrug off and get the conversation over with as soon as possible. And when I got older, I realized how special it was. And the one thing that he would end every conversation with was never give up. He'd say, "Will, and remember, never give up," to the point where I'd finish it before he even finished saying it. And I really bought into it. And I came across this verse when I'd first gotten to college. And it just hit home with me. And it connected with that mantra that has been so, you know, quintessential to my life. And it really are words to live by. The verse reads, "But as for you, be strong and do not give up, for your work will be rewarded." So just something to keep his memory, you know, in my life, and to remind myself what it takes to get to where I want to go.
Well, you're living that right now, man, because you're obviously not where you want to be. You're not the guy, but you're in the NFL. You're waiting for that opportunity, but you're putting in the work. You're putting in the time. You're not giving up. And at some point, you know, opportunities are going to come your way, and you got to make the most of it. So I look forward to seeing you have a ton of success on that field, Will. So thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This is great.
Larry Fitzgerald is one of the NFL's all-time greatest players, greatest wide receivers. He spent all 17 seasons with the Arizona Cardinals, had 1,432 receptions. Only Jerry Rice had more. He had 17,492 yards receiving. Again, only Jerry Rice had more, and 121 touchdowns, made 11 Pro Bowls. Larry's not only one of the best players, one of the classiest too. Larry stays quite busy since his retirement. He's working with Infinite Athlete, which is a cutting-edge technology company that's teamed up with the NFL Players Association on an innovative and extensive partnership that is poised to bring about significant advancements within the worlds of sports performance and player health and wellness. Here is my conversation with Larry Fitzgerald.
Larry, welcome to the show. Appreciate your time, man. And congratulations on, one, a legendary career, but recently you were inducted into the Pitt Hall of Fame. What did that honor mean to you?
It was great. You know, even more so than that, it was like the first time I got a chance to go back in 20 years and really be able to see so many of the people who had, played a major part in my life. You know, I got there at 18 years old, and you forget how immature and, you don't pay attention to the details, right? And, you know, to see some of my academic advisors and some of the administrative assistants, some of the old coaches, university staff, you know, it was great to be able to share that moment. And also, it was 11 other Hall of Fame recipients who played a major part in our history at the university. So to be able to spend time with them and their families was really, really awesome as well. So all in all, I had a blast. And, I'm very, very thankful for my relationship and everything the University of Pittsburgh did to enrich my life.
I've had an opportunity the past couple of years to go to Canton to cover the Pro Football Hall of Fame inductions. In a few years, you're going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, man. Have you thought about what that will be like, putting on that gold jacket, the bronze bust, or are you just going to wait until it happens?
Well, I mean, I would be lying to you if you don't think about it, right? You watch it every single year. You know, so many of the guys that you know and have emulated and followed, you know, get their gold jackets and are going in, and you watch the speeches and you see all the people that have touched their lives throughout the course of their careers and lives in general. And, you know, it definitely makes you think about, you know, if you're lucky enough to get that call, how you want to take in that moment, how you want to recognize the people who played that those big parts for you, the teammates, the coaches, everybody that poured into you. And, you know, as much as it's a celebration of your career, it's also a celebration of everybody who's helped you get to that point, you know, because it starts off as a 7-year-old kid at Martin Luther King Park with just a dream, right? And everybody's, you know, continuing to pour into you. You know, it's like, it's like when you have a plant in your house, and, you know, you get it from the store, and you just water it and give it sun, and then you turn around and 3 years later, you know, that banana plant is 5 feet, right? But you don't necessarily see the growth every single day, but you get a chance to recognize the people who kind of watered you and provided the sunlight for you to help you and grow.
It's year three for you, Larry, out of the NFL. Have you settled into a new routine? Do you even have a different kind of routine? What was the adjustment, the transition like going? Obviously, you set yourself up well to be involved in so many different things, and we'll get into what you're doing with Infinite Athlete. But what's that routine like now?
Yeah, you know, that's one thing I do miss about the league is the routine. You know, I'm a guy who doesn't particularly like structure, but I thrive in it, you know? So I think finding that right balance of structure and leisure and, you know, passion, you know, is something that, you know, takes a little time, you know, because you never had that amount of time. And, you know, you initially get out and you fill it with a lot of things, right? Not knowing exactly what thing is really, you know, your thing, but you just fill it up. And, you know, now having been out 3 years, I have a pretty good routine of what I like, what I don't like. And also, I think it's important for you to try new things that you may not be comfortable with. I think in life, you have your biggest growth when you're in uncomfortable situations. And I've tried to do that continuously to try to expand not only myself, but my interests and passions and desires.
Was there ever a point after retirement? I know you do a show with Tom Brady, Let's Go. And he certainly has talked about trying to persuade you to join him at some point. Was there ever a thought to that, or did you, once you made that decision, once you were out, you were done and you were moving on?
No. I never wanted to leave Arizona. Tom Brady wasn't coming to Arizona. And so like that was never a legitimate option for me. I really enjoyed my 17 years there. Obviously it didn't equate to any championships, right? You know, that's what you play for, but you know, I wouldn't change anything about, you know, the people that I was around and experiences that I had. You know, it was something I'm very fond of. And I look back with great jubilation about the things that I was able to embark on. So, no, I wouldn't change anything.
You had an opportunity to play with Kyler Murray for a couple of years, his first two seasons in the NFL. He's obviously going to be coming back from an ACL injury at some point. He's had a lot of ups and downs. What did you see out of the young man when you played with him? And what does he have to do to be that guy, to be that franchise quarterback going forward?
Well, I mean, I think he is already a franchise quarterback. You know, it's unfortunate that he, you know, hurt his knee last year in December. And, you know, I know he's working diligently to get back on the field. I was able to see him a couple of times in training camp, and I saw him last week when I was in San Francisco for the game. And you know, he's a good young man. You know, he's passionate about the game of football, and you know, it's tough, man. This is a very, very difficult occupation, and playing quarterback in the National Football League, in my opinion, is the most difficult thing to do in all of professional sports. You know, not only do you have to be immensely talented physically, but you have to be astute mentally. You have to be able to respond and make quick decisions under duress, stressful situations. You have to, you know, pick up the slack for inefficiencies around your own team. And all that while leading, you know, 53 men, and everybody's looking to you to be the leader. And so that's a lot to put on somebody's shoulder, especially at 21 coming out of college. Who is, you know, I would say a little bit more comfortable being an introvert, right? And, you know, I think he's grown a great deal, and I'll be really excited when he gets back on the field and be able to show the world what he's capable of and you know, how he can lead a franchise. And, you know, that's my hope for him. And obviously I'm biased because I'm a big Cardinal fan and I want to see him do well as an organization.
Larry, a lot of former players go into the media, and we live in a society now, an age of hot takes and who's saying what, and it gets sometimes blown out of proportion. We see some guys who really go after some of these younger players and are very critical of them. How do you handle that in your roles in the media to make sure it's not like a personal attack, right, Larry? But you can be honest about their performance on the field, but separate that. And I know some of the younger guys get offended.
Yeah. Robin, you mostly like the Philly media that does that. You know, like they set the standard for taking shots, right? You know, Howard Eskin and the boys out there, you know. No, I'm just teasing. But, you know, it's, you know, everybody's different, you know, and I think we saw an incident last week, you know, with Rodney Harrison, and he came out and apologized about, you know, what he said about Zach Wilson. And sometimes, you know, your feelings do come through in a way that they probably shouldn't. You know, you're a pundit and you're supposed to be giving your opinion on what you see. It has nothing to do with the character of the man that you're watching or woman. If you're covering women's sports, you just need to be able to give it an analysis of what you're seeing and make it not be personal. And like sometimes there's things that you have to say about people that you really like and you're friends with. But if their performance on the field is not up to the standard that they set themselves, you know, we base our expectations of what you showed us an athlete, right? If you are capable of throwing for 300 yards, you've done it two times this week and you only throw for 100 yards and you do two picks, like you showed me what you're capable of. You have to explain to me now why you're not showing us the same player that you were 2 weeks ago. And that's not a personal attack on that man, but you showed us what you're capable of. And I think you have to be able to do that and articulate it in a way that's not disrespectful, because the fans want the answers. You know, and I sit back and I watch TV now and I'm curious, like, why did that coach make that decision? Why would Joe Staley go for that 4th-and-1? Backed up on his own 25-yard line with a 4-point lead with 2 minutes to go in the game. Help me understand the thought process that went into making that decision. I'm not attacking you as a man. I just want to know. Just please help me understand it. You know, so as a media member, it's our job to be able to get the information that the fans and the people that are watching the games want to know. They want to know. They want to hear the answers, good, bad, or ugly.
Absolutely. And as a former future Hall of Fame wide receiver, when you look around the league right now and see some of the young men playing those, but Justin Jefferson, Davante Adams, Tyreek Hill, who stands out to you? Whose game do you enjoy seeing the most?
Well, you mentioned three spectacular players who are, you know, game breakers and game changers. And you know, I like to talk about a little bit of other guys who've been doing it for a really, really long time that don't necessarily get the attention that they deserve. I go to Tampa Bay. Mike Evans has been, in my opinion, the most consistent wide receiver in the game over the last 10 years. You know, Jameis Winston, Baker Mayfield, Tom Brady, you name it, whoever he's in there with, he makes it work. He makes it shake. And he does it without a lot of fanfare, no celebrations, no off the field issues. He just gets it done week in and week out. And I've been a big fan of his since he was at Texas A&M. And the guy is still flat out getting it done. Another guy out in LA, Keenan Allen, who's been unbelievably consistent when he's been on the field. He can win in the slot. He can go outside the numbers and beat you. He can throw touchdowns. He can do it out of the backfield. I mean, the guy is immensely talented. And, you know, like, I really enjoy watching, you know, their skill sets and the way they kind of go about doing their business as well.
I've had an opportunity since I moved to Tampa a couple of years ago to see Evans up close and personal and see him play. Yeah. And I feel he's I'm glad you mentioned him. I think he's as great as he is, probably still underrated. Like, he could be if he doesn't play another down, Larry, I think he's a Hall of Famer right now
for what he
accomplished in his career. And you mentioned all those quarterbacks. But I love the way he goes.
And that's not even to mention the things that he does off the field, too. I mean, just as good of a player as he is on the field, he's just as good of a man with his wife and the foundation work they do in Tampa and also back in Texas. I mean, he does a lot of great things. And I think, you know, like, a lot of those stories should be told as well.
I know you appreciate that. And you're somebody who's involved heavily in giving back and doing things for the community. Tell me a little bit about your work with Charlie Ebersol and your involvement now with the NFLPA and Infinite Athlete and what that's about.
Well, you know, I've known Charlie a very long time. And, you know, I was an investor initially. And, you know, he asked me if I would be willing to take on a larger role. And, you know, anything that has to do with, you know, giving athletes, you know, the ability to showcase what they're doing and be able to monetize it. You see, you know, what Shador has done and, you know, giving him access to be able to take advantage of just all of the media attention that he's getting to be able to monetize it is something that a lot of athletes now that are playing in the NFL wish they would have had the opportunity to do while they were playing. And Infinite Athlete has given us the ability to do that, you know, improving player safety, health with, you know, on-field conditions. And, you know, like, you know, Charlie's done a great job of putting together a strategic board that can kind of help him think through strategically all the things that can make it a better experience for everybody that's involved. And, you know, I really believe in what he's built. I think that it has a really bright future. And, you know, we have some unbelievable partners that are going to help us get to where we're looking to get.
Opportunities have changed significantly since you played in the league, Larry. For these young men now and some of the players in college and the players in the NFL, opportunities like this with Infinite Athlete, how important is it to really sit down, have the right folks around you, the right agent, the right team to make sure which decisions you make going forward are the ones that best for you?
You know, Rob, it's funny, man, that you say that about, you know, the endless opportunities now. But, you know, I get on my dad all the time. I said, Dad, you couldn't just wait 10 years to have me, man. Like, come on, man. We would have been in such a better situation, Dad. You would put me in, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's so very important. I was fortunate to have, you know, two parents that really, you know, put my best interest in hand in every decision they made. It wasn't ever about the money. It was always about who can I entrust that's going to have my son's best interest in hand. I was fortunate to have two parents, and then it just really helped me, like, flush out all the ideas and thoughts that I had. And, you know, if we didn't have the answers, you know, we knew where to go to be able to get solid answers, right? And I think young people now in college, the resources, I go back to talk to these schools. I went to Alabama last year. I went to Notre Dame last year. I went to Cal to speak to the teams. And I'm like, I couldn't believe, you know, just the resources that are available. You know, they have social media teams that help the young men create content if that's what they want to do. If they want to get into entrepreneurship, they have skills development teams that come in and help them do that. And I mean, just everything that they're doing to help create this well-rounded student athlete, on top of being able to make, you know, substantial money. And I'm doing some work over at Morgan Stanley now, you know, to be able to help young players, you know, improve their financial literacy. You know, if you're making $1 million a year at 18, 19 years old, you think about, you know, saving that money as opposed to going out and buying that, you know, that fancy $150,000 vehicle when it's not necessary. I mean, you can get a little bit more, you know, cheap and efficient car. It gets you to point A to point B just like any other car would. Then you can be able to save that money and let compound interest do what it always does. And, you know, just try to help them make better sound decisions, give them more options to think about, you know, when they're at such a young and impressionable age.
Larry, I appreciate your time, man. Wish you a ton of success and a ton of blessings.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. It's good to talk to you, and I hope you all the success as well.
Welcome back to the AP Pro Football Podcast. It's Pro Picks time. Week four, I was 4-0 straight up and 3-1 against the spread. So overall, we're 12-4 straight up, 8-6-2 against the spread. I pick every game and all of the picks come out on Wednesday. You can see that and read them at apnews.com. For the second straight week, the best bet, I'm going to stick with the Eagles. This time, they're -4.5 against the LA Rams on the road. They're undefeated, the Eagles are, and they just keep winning in different ways. Had to go to overtime last week against Washington. They've overcome sluggish starts and defensive breakdowns and spotty performances. They've got time to get things on track. The Rams are 2-2. They're playing better than most people expected. We figured this is going to be a rebuilding year where the Rams struggle to get the 5 or 6 wins, and they've looked a heck of a lot better than that. Matthew Stafford is banged up, just as Cooper Kupp is about to come back. I'm going to take the Eagles to win this game and cover the 4.5 on the road, 27-16. Next, we'll go to New Orleans at New England. The Patriots, -1. They are 1-3. They got a rebound after Bill Belichick suffered the worst loss of his coaching career at Dallas, 38-3. The Saints are 2-2. They were dominated at home by the Buccaneers, and they haven't really got their offense going at all with Derek Carr. I like the Patriots -1 at home. Bill Belichick figuring things out at some point. He's got to, right? I'll take them 20-17 in this one. Then Cincinnati at Arizona. I keep taking the Bengals, and last week they were destroyed by the Tennessee Titans. They're -3 on the road against the Cardinals. Obviously, Joe Burrow's calf injury has had a significant impact on his performance, and the Bengals, my pick to win the Super Bowl, are 1-3 and look awful. The Cardinals have played better than their 1-3 record. We all thought that this was going to be a year where Arizona is in it for the number one pick, and they most certainly seem to be in contention with the Bears for that. They've played a lot better, though. I'll take the Bengals 26-17. Lastly, the New York Jets at Denver. Broncos -1.5 in the Nathaniel Hackett Bowl. The Jets are 1-3, but they came close last week. They almost beat the Super Bowl champs in Zach Wilson's best game of the season. They're playing for their offensive coordinator, who was destroyed in comments by Broncos coach Sean Payton before the season. Hackett, of course, was Denver's coach last year and did a terrible job, and that's how he ended up in New York, reuniting with Aaron Rodgers, the offensive coordinator. However, we know Aaron Rodgers went down in week one. Russell Wilson rode the Broncos, the 1-3 Broncos, to their first win of the Sean Payton era. Comeback victory over the Bears last week, but New York's defense is a much tougher D than the Chicago Bears. I will take the Jets in. This is somewhat of an upset since they are 1.5-point underdogs, 20-17. Eagles, Patriots, Bengals giving the points, Jets plus the 1.5. Time for some final thoughts. Last week, as I mentioned earlier, Zach Wilson played his best game of the season, although they lost, the Jets lost to the Chiefs, and he had a crucial fumble in the fourth quarter. Now, I've been extremely critical of Zach Wilson, never made it personal. I just didn't think that he was the right man to be the quarterback for the Jets, but he proved last week that the faith that Robert Saleh and the Jets organization had in him was at least deserved. He certainly earned another opportunity. However, after the game, Rodney Harrison, the NBC, former player NBC analyst on Sunday Night Football, is interviewing Chris Jones, the all-pro defensive lineman for the Chiefs, and he's attempting to get Chris Jones to say something critical of Zach Wilson, and Rodney calls him garbage. It wasn't the time and place after a game like that to be calling anyone garbage. In fact, you shouldn't call anyone garbage. It should be about their performance on the field. Maybe his performance has been terrible, has been trashy. Whatever the case may be, Chris Jones handled that extremely professionally and very well. Refused to get baited into calling out Zach Wilson, saying he stinks, saying he's terrible, said he's even a special quarterback at one point during that. Give a ton of credit
to Chris Jones for the way he handled that interview. And I know we're in a clickbait, hot take, all kinds of everybody trying to get their name. And I'm Rodney Harris. He doesn't need any more attention on himself. I thought he did. His performance in that interview, I thought that was absolutely garbage. That's it for this week. Thank you to Larry Fitzgerald and Will Levis. And thank you for listening. Please be sure to download and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to your pods. Also, check out my colleague Ralph Russo and his AP Top 25 College Football Podcast. Until next week, I'm Rob Motti, reminding you, make a difference, be a blessing.